from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. One final hour here on Willard and Dibs. It's Mark Randy in for Mark Willard alongside Dan Dibley here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And while you're there, make sure to check out how Bonte and Chasky and Steiny and Goo reacted to Steph Curry's epic performance in Paris to help win Team USA a gold medal. You can also find there very shortly on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast, and as well on YouTube, our conversation with Bob Fitzgerald on the River Islands guest line. Of course, Fitz was out in Paris, not calling Team USA games, but calling a number of Olympic games. And then he got back out to States, Dibs, and he traveled immediately to Tennessee to call Niners and Titans a relatively a kind of interesting preseason game. Not a ton happened for the 49ers. They did have one major injury. Ambry Thomas, Dibs, a broken forearm.
Oh, man, you hate to see it.
Having surgery on it announced today by head coach Kyle Shanahan. He was not a guarantee, not a lock to make the roster.
Nope.
We'll see what his future holds. Even if he does stay a Niner, he will be out for a vast majority of this season. And then this one kind of comes as a surprise, Dibs. Kyle Shanahan speaking to the media today in Santa Clara, letting everyone know that Kalia Davis, who is going to be a reserve defensive tackle for the 49ers this year and actually had a pretty good showing in Tennessee against the Titans in the preseason game, had a sack. He's having kind of a scope done on one of his knees, and he's going to be back, according to Shanahan, quote, some point halfway into the season.
Yeah.
So the Niners are going to lose a potential reserve corner for maybe the whole year. Maybe he wasn't even going to be a Niner. And then they're going to lose a reserve defensive lineman for maybe around half the season.
Right. I think Ambry Thomas was going to get cut. So now that makes this a little bit of an easier choice because, you know, he's going to be gone for a long time with the forearm surgery. But Kalia Davis is the one that hurts because, you know, your D-line depth and your D-line run stopping has been a big question mark. And he's a guy that many people were looking at as one of these rotational defensive linemen who could help you. And, you know, you get the knee scope, and the fact that he said he'll be back sometime halfway through the year, that feels like 6 to 8 weeks or maybe 8 to 12 weeks,
yeah,
if he's
going to
be gone
that
long. So maybe it's, I don't even know.
We're 4 weeks from the Niners week one game, right?
To the day, yeah.
So if halfway through the year would be somewhere anywhere between week 6 to 10, you would think?
Right, and we talked about the deadline, the trade deadline, which is, you mentioned it, November 5th, I think.
I think so,
during their bye week. So if you're looking at, you know, halfway through the year, I think the Niners have on week 9 bye. I think they've got 8 games until then, so you wouldn't expect to see Kalia Davis until that time. And they even asked him if it was an MCL, and You know, Shanahan said, I don't know exactly what it was, but some stuff behind his kneecap. So there you go, some stuff.
Yikes. Not great.
No, not good at all.
That's not a stuff that you want to hear from Kyle Shanahan.
No. There were some positives, though. Not among them, the fact that you tried to fade the Dibber, and the Dibber hit on his lock.
I didn't follow through on that one. I didn't bet it.
Smart.
Yeah.
Dibber said take the Niners and the 5.5, and it was a little bit of a backdoor cover.
It was.
They got there late. Lucas with a text helping me celebrate my win as we all try to fade the Dibber because, you know, I've been running a little cold in my bets, but chalk that one up in the win
column.
There you go.
There's a win. See if he can make it a streak.
Yeah. And Malik Mustafa, he looks like he's playing like with his hair on fire. He's going to be fun to watch.
And there's a chance that he plays really meaningful snaps from day one because who knows when Hufanga is going to be back and healthy.
Right.
So Mustafa might have to go in there and play. That's a little scary, though, because you could potentially be looking at, say, Hufanga's not ready week one, week two, week three, whatever it is. You might be looking at a safety tandem, Dibs, of a sophomore and a rookie.
Right.
It's a little scary when you've got your two safeties. You're supposed to be the last line of defense with that little experience. That you might just be asked to be getting beat down the field, especially both those guys tend to be kind of like hybrid linebackers. They like to play closer to the line of scrimmage and tackle running backs and be run support safeties. And in today's passing league, that might not be the best combination, but it would be great experience for guys like Jair Brown and Malik.
For sure, and I think that Jair Brown, when he came in last year and started playing a bunch when you had Hufanga get hurt, I think he appointed himself very well, and he had a great Super Bowl. So I do think that Jair Brown's a guy who gained a lot of confidence over the second half of the year.
Yeah.
So I'm less worried about Jair Brown than I am about, you know, having a rookie, Malik Mustafa, go in there. But you have other depth pieces in there. George Odom is a guy who can come in and help you out in the secondary. But it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out defensively based on health and, you know, the depth chart here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and Kyle Shanahan did also talk about Talanoa Hufanga. We're just talking about if Hufanga isn't ready for week one, which I would say is probably likely at this point. Maybe it is Malik Mustafa who plays week number one, but Shanahan did say this about Hufanga, whose next checkup is on Thursday. So look for news about Talanoa Hufanga late this week. Shanahan did say of Hufanga, quote, he's doing very well. Hopefully we can get some good news and get him back at practice. So look for that coming up later this week. But if the Niners are without him, that defensive secondary might look a little bit young and inexperienced going into early in the season. One of the other positives, Dibs, in addition to Mustafa, who had that epic 4th-and-1 stop near the goal line, it was young linebacker D. Winters, who I don't know who you thought of when you were watching him play, but honestly, I did a couple of double takes because he was reminding me of Dre Greenlaw, the way that he was playing and his aggressiveness, sometimes to the point of over-aggressiveness,
right,
which kind of describes Dre Greenlaw, and he's obviously been able to figure it out and maybe tone it down just a little bit at times, but you need your linebackers to play with that kind of ferociousness. But D. Winters had a crazy hard hit on Will Levis, the Titans quarterback, near the goal line. I'm sure everyone on the Titans sideline was screaming at their quarterback to not take hits like that.
Right.
In the preseason, but D. Winters was more than happy to deliver that blow. D. Winters had a nice preseason debut as well. Now, he's likely not going to start because you did sign Devondre Campbell to replace Dre Greenlaw, at least to begin the season, but we could be looking at D. Winters as someone who maybe come later on in the year potentially supplant someone like a veteran Devondre Campbell, or God forbid there's ever an injury, maybe you feel confident in D. Winters stepping in and playing that role too.
And he may start when you go to the base package when you need three linebackers,
yeah,
because right now you've got Devondre Campbell in there with Fred Warner, and if you're going to the nickel package when you've got five defensive backs, you just have the two linebackers. But when you play base and you're base 4-3, that's when D. Winters might be the guy to step up there and play on that weak side, the Will linebacker spot for Dre Greenlaw. And, you know, you're going to need a third linebacker. And right now, so far through one game, looks like he'd be the front runner as opposed to Flanagan Fowles, who's on the roster, I think, more for special teams than anything else.
Yeah. The other main storyline, of course, around the 49ers is Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams, and there's really nothing new, Dibs, from the weekend. From late last week to now, the only real update there is, and I'm not sure this really qualifies as an update, but the only update is from Adam Schefter of ESPN, who went on the Pat McAfee show and had this to say about the 49ers and wide receiver Brandon Ayuk.
Now it looks like the focus and emphasis is on keeping him in San Francisco and not trading him. But I would say that this has had many twists and turns to it. And until there's final resolution, you don't know. But the 49ers want to keep him. They don't want to trade him. They've never wanted to trade him. They've wanted to get a deal worked out with him. The deal has been elusive.
I find it funny the way that the national media has been talking about this whole story, Dibs, because Schefter begins that whole thing by saying, well, now the 49ers want to re-sign Brandon Ayuk, as if that wasn't what they wanted this entire time, right? Why would the 49ers ever be interested in trying to trade away Brandon Ayuk? That makes no sense to me. I think it's all been a big game by the 49ers, Dibs, and it is a little bit concerning that they haven't been able to really seemingly make any kind of headway in relation to an Ayuk extension, but I find it hard to believe the Niners were ever terribly motivated to trade away Brandon Ayuk in a season in which they're trying desperately to win a Super Bowl.
Right, and if they were terribly motivated to do it, it would have been before the draft when they could have gotten more draft compensation and they could have drafted a player that they would have liked to have on their roster now. But if they wanted to trade him now, you'd want to get a player back who's at least commensurate to what Brandon Ayuk is, and there aren't that many wide receivers out there who are available who are as good as Ayuk, and that's what made the whole Davante Adams three-team like trade the dream scenario, which it doesn't happen in the NFL, three-team trades, we know that, but just talking about that with Willard last week and the idea of, you know, picks to the Raiders, and the Raiders give Adams to the Niners, and the Niners give Ayuk to Pittsburgh, that sort of a dream, you know, pie in the sky scenario would have worked for the Niners, because then you get, you know, Davante Adams instead of Brandon Ayuk, and you could feel like you're still not sacrificing this year. But other than that, you're not going to trade Brandon Ayuk for anything that can't help you right now.
Yeah, and then the
that makes no sense.
Yeah, I'm with you. The other thing that Schefter said on the Pat McAfee show was how the Ayuk conversation relates to the Trent Williams conversation.
I think their focus has been on Ayuk, and we got a 36-year-old tackle who, it doesn't matter that he misses camp. I would think that they'll get that addressed and figured out and get him in. And if he misses camp, he misses some camp, but they want him back. He's so good, they have to have him back. And I would think that they want to get this Ayuk thing taken care of before they move on to Trent Williams.
What does that mean to you, Dibs? Adam Schefter, ESPN, saying that he thinks the 49ers are more focused right now on Brandon Ayuk's potential extension, and then once they get that figured out, they'll deal with Trent Williams. Because to me, that makes me feel like, okay, well, maybe we're not going to get a resolution on either for a little bit still. But part of me feel like the 49ers also aren't worried at all about Trent Williams, and maybe the reason that there's no pressure on them to get a deal done ASAP is because they feel Trent Williams doesn't need a long build-up to get ready for week one.
Right, and you probably wouldn't have him in camp anyway, really practicing every day. I mean, he'd be in camp and he'd be going through some drills, but it's better off with an older offensive lineman that he's able to not be on the field. So I don't think that you're really worried about that at all right now. He wouldn't have played in any of the three preseason games, and now that you've canceled joint practices with New Orleans, which is due to injury, and you've got guys already dropping like flies here in your camp, so the last thing you would want is for Trent Williams to come in and get a soft tissue injury or, you know, hammy or groin or whatever that can sometimes happen to offensive linemen. So I don't think you're worried about him coming in and not being fit. I'm sure Trent is out there doing everything he normally does to get ready to come in and compete, but money-wise, it's the Brandon Ayuk money that has to get settled first, and then the Trent Williams reshuffling or the restructuring. You can find out how much you have left after you do Brandon, assuming that they actually get a deal done. And it feels like there's some momentum, at least, toward him getting a new deal, not playing on the fifth-year option. I think the idea of them trading Brandon Ayuk is dead. It feels like I mean, there have been no whispers. I haven't checked in on our friends from Pittsburgh lately, but it feels like that part of this is no longer in play. So it's either play on the fifth-year option or get an extension, and I think that they want to extend him. I'm sure he wants to get that money. Once that's done, you can see what money's left over to try to work with Trent and his deal.
Feels like the Niners are willing to put up with the drama of not having their all-pro receiver in camp just to win the contract, to win the negotiation, and to, you know, a good reason they want to win it. They're trying to keep this team together as much as they can, and at this point, every hundreds of thousands of dollars matters, and it makes it easier to figure things out contractually and monetarily and everything. So I get why, you know, maybe they're being a little bit difficult here, but at what point do the 49ers, if Ayuk continues to not blink, and I guess maybe he's blinked a little bit by refusing to be traded to certain places like New England and Cleveland, but if he continues to not blink and is unwilling to sign the Niners contract offer, which has been reported to be around $26 million per year, we don't know what the guarantees would be, but if he refuses to sign the deal that's on the table for him right now, at what point do the 49ers say, okay, Brandon, sorry, we have to kind of put you to the back burner for a second because we got to get Trent Williams in here. Like, if it was a done deal and they knew what they were going to sign Trent no matter what, it would have happened already. They probably feel relatively confident that it can happen, but at some point, if you're left with the possibility of having neither of them for week one, you're not going to just continue holding off on Trent because you haven't worked it out with Ayuk yet. At some point, you're going to get to a point where you got to just say, okay, Trent, like, let's get this figured out now so you can play 4 weeks from now when Aaron Rodgers and the Jets are in town.
I think both of them are in that same boat where you have to, you know, make a decision. With Brandon Ayuk, it's either we're going to sit down and hammer this out and get this done, or no more contract talks and you got to play football or not. And same thing with Trent. And, you know, when you get to the spot where, all right, Trent, you want to get a little bit of a restructure. You want more money. You're not happy. We get that. Here's our offer. Take it or leave it. And, you know, come play football because we're getting down, like you said, 4 weeks. It's 4 weeks from today. You've got two more preseason games and you got to start getting in there and figuring out the work you need to put in to get your team ready. And you got to know who you're going to have. And if you're not going to have Ayuk because he is dead set on getting a new contract, well, then you got to figure out who you can play at X receiver. If Ricky Pearsall is going to be healthy, or maybe it's Chris Conley, or who's it going to be? Juwan Jennings that you put out there opposite of Debo. And same thing with your offensive line. You got to figure out if Trent Williams is really going to come in and play. What does he need to get his deal done in order to be ready to play? All these things, we're not up against the deadline yet, but every day that goes by, we're getting closer to it.
Well, we were on the air 2 weeks ago, and I shared with you, I feel like the week, the day, the time period where I start getting worried about both these guys is this week, when the joint practices were supposed to happen, because Kyle Shanahan has said time and time and time again, these joint practices, which the Niners generally do leading up to, I think when they had four preseason games, it was either the second or the third, probably the third preseason game. Now it's leading up to the second preseason game because they only have three preseason games. But you practice against the team that you're going to play against, leading into that preseason game. And Shanahan has said that those joint practices, those 2 days where they share the field together, are more important and more valuable to a team, at least in his opinion, than any of the preseason games. And now the 49ers, I'm sure this is not an easy decision for Kyle because, again, he values these joint practices so much. But the Niners have had to cancel their joint practices with the Saints, which, by the way, we're going to take place in Irvine, even though the game is here in Santa Clara, because the Niners don't have enough practice field space.
Yep.
How wild is that?
That's super wild.
I mean, Levi Stadium is, what, a decade old, and you don't even have enough space to house joint practices?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Maybe you don't have a second locker room right there at the practice facility, or maybe it's just you don't have enough fields, because you've been down there, and you've got like three fields in a row stacked back to back to back, and maybe you need more than three to have two full 90-man practice squad, preseason squads, to be able to be out there. Maybe it's not big enough.
You were going to get ready for a preseason game at your home stadium by traveling to Irvine to do joint practices with the team that was going to come to Santa Clara and play you.
It seems weird.
It's wild.
It's super wild.
It's wild. But almost more wild than the fact that they had to cancel it because they don't have enough bodies.
Yeah, they have too many guys who were injured. What, 23 injured players right now?
23 guys missed the Thursday practice. Now you throw in Kalia Davis and Ambry Thomas, who wouldn't be unable to participate. And then you also, I think those 23 players that missed includes Ayuk and Trent, just not because of injury, but because of other reasons. But yeah, 23, add in those two, now 25 guys who would be unavailable to participate in those joint practices.
It seems alarming that, you know, you have that many guys hurt this early in camp. Like, what are we doing? Are guys not coming in proper shape? Or do you have just players with minor issues, minor injuries, things that guys could actually play through if it was during the regular season and you're just being really cautious?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not a good sign. And if you were to, I don't know, make a case against the 49ers going into this season, health certainly would play a role into it. The drama relating to Ayuk and Trent Williams would play a role into that. And if that stuff happens, and if you have injuries and you're not healthy, you're going to have to rely on some of your younger players, Dibs. And I did our post-game show on Saturday with Sterling Bennett after the game against the Titans, and I was looking through some of their recent draft classes, because if these injuries are things that lead into the regular season, you're going to need your youngsters to kind of pick up some of the slack. And Dominic Pooney might start at right guard. He was the Niners' third-round selection this most recent draft. That looks to be like a major successful pick. You had Renardo Green, a DB from Florida State, who played. Ricky Pearsall, your number one overall pick in the first round, he did not play because he is dealing with a minor injury. We already talked about Malik Mustafa. He's looking like a quality player this early in his career. But also Isaac Garendo did not play. Jacob Cowing did not play, in addition to Ricky Pearsall. And then you go back to some of the other drafts to find out who maybe are some of the under-the-radar players that might need to fill in. And I stumbled upon the 2022 draft, Dibs.
Okay.
This was the Brock Purdy draft. Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, picked the final pick of the 2022 NFL draft, and that's obviously been the greatest draft pick in the history of NFL football. To get anything, let alone what Brock Purdy is, out of that pick is absolutely insane. And it saved that draft. Let me just read through some of the names for the 49ers in the 2022 NFL draft. The Niners' first selection in the second round, they didn't have a first-round pick, was Drake Jackson. Drake Jackson out for the year, and even when he's been healthy, hasn't been able to do all that much. He had 3 sacks, I think, week one against the Steelers this past season, played a handful more games, missed the rest of the season, hasn't played this entire season. Their second selection in 2022, Ty Davis Price, no longer on the team. He gone. Third selection that year, Danny Gray, who might not make the team this year.
Right.
He's best known for catching a deep ball from Trey Lance in the preseason a couple of years ago.
That's it.
Fourth round pick and fourth overall pick, Spencer Burford, who played for you last year and was solid, not great, but that's by far of that group so far, probably the best draft pick of that group. But it's not as if he is an entrenched starter.
No, he's not practicing right now.
Dealing with a broken hand.
Yeah, so... Yeah. And you got Dominic Pooney, who looks like might be taking his spot.
Even if they both were healthy, Pooney might be starting over. That's
exactly
how good Pooney has been, and maybe how uninspired Burford's performance has been. After that, you have Samuel Womack, who for years has been rumored to, maybe he's the next nickel corner for the Niners. He hasn't panned out. And then you got Nick Zakel. He's an offensive lineman, for those who don't know. Nick Zakel, he hasn't really done anything.
Probably won't make the team this year.
Maybe not. We'll see. Kalia Davis, who we just talked about earlier, he's now out for maybe half the season. Actually played pretty decent on Saturday, but hasn't done anything so far with the 49ers. Has played in 3 games in his career. After that, Tariq Castro-Fields. I don't think any Niner fan really knows who that is. He was a cornerback, no longer with them. And then the last pick of the draft was Brock Purdy. Like, you're dealing with injuries, and you're already a veteran group. You need to rely on your draft classes. And aside from Brock Purdy, you're getting almost zero help from this draft class. Absolutely. Like, nearly zero. An entire draft class aside from Brock Purdy. It is crazy. Crazy how this 49er team has been able to keep up their level despite not getting a lot of impactful players in drafts the last couple of years.
It's because they've done a lot with free agency and not necessarily the top of the free agency market, although Javon Hargrave was a guy they spent a lot of money on at the top of free agency, and hopefully he has a better year this year. But now you're looking at Malik Collins and Leonard Floyd, guys who you brought in from the outside, and even, you know, smaller players like Rock Yassin, who you hope can provide depth, another undrafted player by you, a guy who comes in with a little bit more experience, and Yetur Gross-Matos, who comes in, and another guy you brought in through free agency, Jordan Elliott. So all these players that you haven't drafted, you've brought in on smaller deals to try to give you the depth that you would have hoped you had through the draft, but you haven't. And, you know, you go back to Javon Kinlaw and, you know, other highly drafted players that haven't worked out for you. And
Trey Lance.
Right. You've had to supplement it. You've had to augment your draft misses with free agency, and they've done a pretty good job of that, but that's kind of the way that this roster has been built.
I mean, look at 2021. The 2021 draft, the year before the year I was just laying out, that was Trey Lance, then Aaron Banks. That's been a great pick. Aaron Banks is an entrenched starter and looks like he will be for years to come. After that, Trey Sermon. Not a Niner anymore.
Nope.
Trey
Ambry
Lance, obviously,
Thomas,
not a Niner.
Yep.
Then Ambry Thomas, who might not be a Niner anymore come a couple of weeks. Jalen Moore, who's not going to start for the Niners on the offensive line.
He might. Well, if Williams doesn't show up, he's starting.
If he starts, it's an issue. He's played in six games as a Niner in a number of years. And then you have some really great picks after that. Diamador Lenore in the fifth round, Talanoa Hufanga in the fifth round, Elijah Mitchell in the sixth round. Those are all great values for those spots. But there's been a lot of misses, a lot of misses lately, even just last year. And I know, I mean, we could do this with every single team's draft, but the Niners have made a habit of missing on some of their earlier picks. Cameron Lotu, they picked in the third round last year, hasn't played a game. And he was in danger of being cut last year before he got placed on season-ending PUP or season-ending IR because of an injury he picked up in training camp. Like, there will come a time where the 49ers need to turn to their younger, cheaper talent. And that's why there's so much riding, I think, on this draft class for the 49ers, and why it was so good to see it from Alec Mustafa and from Dominic Pooney and Renardo Green, and why you just hope that Pearsall, Garendo, and Cowing can get healthy. Because with Brock Purdy's contract looming, you're not going to have the ability to go out and sign a Javon Hargrave in coming offseason. You're simply not going to be able to do it. You're going to have to hit on your draft picks.
Right, and that's the way, you know, most teams are able to sustain is through that very way, through hitting on the draft. And even if it's not your high picks, and you mentioned the draft from 2021 where you did pretty well at the bottom of the draft, and Elijah Mitchell is an interesting one. I don't know if he's going to wind up making this team this year, if he's going to be the third running back behind Jordan Mason and Christian McCaffrey. It feels like Mason has jumped over Mitchell. You have Matt Breida in the mix as well, so there's not going to be a lot of spots. I don't know if Matt Breida makes the team. It might come down to Mitchell or Breida. I think Jordan Mason absolutely makes the team. He provides a little bit more of a physical run than what you have even with Christian McCaffrey. So I think that Mason makes the team coming out of camp, but might come down to Mitchell or Breida. And then, like you said, looking at the future, you've got to find a way to get these guys on their rookie deals to actually hit and stick around. You can't always be out there shopping in free agency and spending big money.
Yeah, and the Niners did officially sign Robbie Chosen to a one-year deal. We decided it was Robbie Chosen, not Chosen Anderson, although it was at one point Chosen Anderson. Now it's Robbie Chosen, R-O-B-B-I-E. They signed him to a one-year deal, and they got injuries all over the place. They had to cancel their joint practices with the Saints coming up on Thursday and Friday of this week because they just simply did not have the depth of bodies to make sure that they can get through that joint practice session with the Saints unscathed and with an amount of players that they feel comfortable enough going into the final 2 weeks of the preseason with. So we'll see what the future does hold for the 49ers, but really no update on Brandon Ayuk and on Trent Williams. And before we do move on, Dibs, I just want to ask you, because I know this was the week that I pointed to as the moment where I would become worried about Ayuk and Trent Williams. At what point do you become worried about them potentially? Because I don't think Ayuk is going to get traded. But at what point do you become worried that maybe this turns into a situation where either or both of them potentially miss regular season games?
I would wait a couple more weeks for that because, I mean, you've got this week and it's, you know, Saints week and you got that game coming up this weekend. And then after that, it's a short turnaround for the Raiders. I don't think that either of them, even if they signed right now, I don't think either of them would play in either of those games. So really, for me, it's about the run up between the Raider game and the actual opener of the season. It's about a 2 week period, 2.5 weeks between the Raider final preseason game and the Jet Monday night game. So that's where I'm looking for them to both sign because you're going to have a bunch of practices in there. And so you get past the Raider game. They both get signed. What does Ayuk need? A week to ramp up and to get out there and, you know, start to run and stretch and, you know, get through the soreness and then be ready to play football. And probably the same thing for Trent Williams. So I would look at more than a week, probably about a week and a half out, back timing it from the Jets game. So that Jets game is, what, the 9th, I think? Yeah, it's the...
Yep, September 9th. September 9th.
So as long as you're in by, let's just say, August 25th, which would be 2 weeks from yesterday, that's about the time that I think they have to be in by.
We'll see. We'll see, and we'll, of course, keep you updated if anything does happen regarding Ayuk or Trent Williams or both here on 95.7 The Game. All right, the story of the day, Dibs, has been about Stephen Curry and his performance at the Olympics, willing Team USA to a gold medal with his performance in the semifinal game on Thursday against Serbia and the final game, the gold medal game on Saturday against France. In those final two games, he went 17 for 27 from deep in those two rounds. And how about this for a statistic? I pulled this courtesy of Raymond Ritter, the great PR director for the Golden State Warriors. Players with 4 or more NBA titles, 2 or more MVPs, and an Olympic gold medal, Dibs. 4 or more titles, 2 or more MVPs, and an Olympic gold. Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, LeBron James, and Steph Curry.
That's it.
That's the list.
End of list.
Those five.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good list.
Very good list.
You can make a starting five out of that. Steph, Jordan, Magic, LeBron, and Bill Russell.
Yeah. Steph, LeBron, Magic, Jordan, and Bill Russell.
Those are the five
with
to have
four,
ever.
4, 2, and 1.
Correct.
4 titles, 2 finals MVPs? Or
2 just MVPs.
MVPs.
Yeah.
And then
and
1 gold medal.
At least
medal.
An Olympic gold medal.
Interesting. Wow. I mean, that's incredible company when you think about it, because KD has got more golds, but he's only got, well, he's got 2 titles. He doesn't have the 4.
And he only has 1 MVP.
Right.
Yeah.
So just even the list of players with 4 titles, it's not that long.
No.
Like you've got Draymond, but he doesn't have the MVPs. Clay's got the 4 titles.
Not MVPs.
Robert Horry has like 7 titles, I think.
I don't think he has an Olympic gold medal either, but yeah, certainly doesn't have the MVPs.
But yeah, if you just work off the list of players with 4 titles, that list in and of itself is very small.
And the Olympic gold medal stat added in there, it kind of takes away a lot of players because, what, until what year was it when NBA players were allowed to participate in the Olympics? It was not that long ago.
Right.
So
92, I think.
Yeah, so Bill Russell has it because he won it before he got into the NBA, an Olympic gold medal. But so many of the players, say, of the 70s or the 80s who were great and maybe have the 4 finals and the 2 MVPs, weren't able to get the Olympic gold because NBA players weren't participating in the Olympics at that point. So that's kind of a limiting factor here. But still, anytime you're in the conversation with Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and LeBron, you know you're doing something right.
No, it's incredible. And, you know, if you look at the amount of players with just 4 titles, there aren't that many of them that have it. Like Tim Duncan's an interesting one because he's got the 4 titles. He's actually got five titles, and I would guess that he has two MVPs.
I would think so. Definitely at least one.
Three finals MVPs, and I don't know if he has an MVP. Yeah, three finals MVPs. I'm just looking at his
two-time most valuable player, 2002, 2003.
Okay, but I don't think that he won gold. I don't even know if he represented Team USA, being from St. Croix and the Virgin Islands.
Interesting, yeah.
Because he would have been, well, and he got bronze in 04. He was a part of the bronze medal-winning team in 2004, so there you go. He did actually represent the U.S., but he was a part of that losing team.
That led to the redeem team in 08, yeah.
And some of these other guys with more than four titles, Steve Kerr is one. He's got five. You got Ron Harper and Dennis Rodman, Don Nelson, shout out Nelly, and basically all of those Boston Celtics who played from 57 to 69. Like Russell's got 11, Sam Jones has 10, and all these other guys. But to your point, like John Havlicek, he won 8 with Boston, but I don't think that he played as an amateur before he became a pro and, you know, went for gold before the pros were allowed to play.
Let's see. I'm looking at the only thing from this list, the only thing that's keeping Andre Iguodala off is the MVPs, because he's a four-time NBA champion, and he won gold for the U.S. in 2012 at the London Olympics, but, of course, not an MVP at any point in his NBA career. So Steph Curry joining elite company with Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, LeBron James, and Steph Curry. And he helped will Team USA to victory. Something that I teased for you off-air, Dibs, was the French call of Steph Curry's barrage on Saturday at the Olympics. It's an incredible call, because this is the French call, of course, when Team France is fighting tooth and nail to try to win a gold medal on their home floor, and then Steph Curry goes human torch mode, and here's how it sounded on French TV.
Attention, attention, au tir de Steph Curry! Oh non, mais non, mais non! Steph Curry! Au buzzer, mais c'est pas possible! Qui renverse pour Kevin Durant. Ah, il a la main chaude, Steph Curry, il a la main chaude, il a la main chaude.
C'est pas possible.
Il a la main chaude, Steph Curry.
C'est not possible.
C'est not possible.
It's not possible.
It's one of the best. One of the best lines. And I read this online. I don't know if there is a French speaker in the audience in the listening that could shoot us a text on the text line that can confirm this. But apparently, one of the lines that the French broadcasters use there translates to, "This devil named Curry is hurting us."
It's, I mean, they're not wrong. I don't know if I would call him the devil, but, you know.
To France that day, he was.
No doubt.
He dominated.
C'est pas possible. It's so good. And Curry, just the way that they're saying Curry over and over.
Man.
Just to put a bow on your stat from Raymond Ritter, and I love it, I was thinking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as somebody who had to be on that list, because he's a six-time champion. He's a two-time NBA Finals MVP, but in 1968, he boycotted.
Oh,
he said
that's right.
He boycotted Team USA, which the U.S. went out and won the gold medal in the games in Mexico City, and that was right in during the time where he had changed his name, and so because of the backlash, he chose not to go out. He would have made the team, obviously.
And they would have still won with him. He would not have held them down, that's
exactly
for sure.
So he would have been on that list, and that's why he's not on the list.
Well, Kareem being on that list would not tarnish it at all, because Kareem is as good as you can get.
Yeah.
Even if it included one more name, and that other name was Kareem, that's still a great company to be in.
And but Shaq, somehow not on there. Four-time champion, and Shaq won gold in 1996, but apparently Shaq does not have two MVPs. He's got three finals MVPs.
Does he have only one regular season MVP?
I'm just looking.
Yeah, one 2000, he was the NBA MVP, and that's it.
Yep, there you go. Interesting list from the great Raymond Ritter.
It's hard to get on that list.
Totally.
It's hard, and makes what Steph Curry has done that much more impressive. I mean, those are legitimate all-time greats in the sport, and Steph Curry is up there with them. And obviously, you'd have to go back and like run through the Olympic runs. Obviously, like LeBron is on a stage to himself, and you could say the same for Michael and everything that they've accomplished. But for Steph Curry to win his gold medal the way that he did, I know Fitz, who was on with us a couple of hours ago, Bob Fitzgerald, who's been around Team USA in the Olympics a lot, talking about how it's very rarely is a walk in the park. At least in the gold medal game, it's generally very competitive. I feel like a lot of us think about Team USA in the Olympics, and we think of it as kind of that walk in the park. And Steph, and a lot of these guys have multiple. Like LeBron has multiple gold medals. Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, of course, were together on maybe the greatest basketball team ever, the Dream Team, way back when, with everybody else that was awesome from that era. Steph Curry was the driving force behind it, and if he did not get the job done, if he did not do that himself, he would be off this list and he would not have another opportunity. He's got to be the only guy on this list, at least in the modern game, to have one shot at it, to be that great and to have only one shot at winning the Olympic gold, right. He did not let it pass him by.
Yeah, and I mean, he was so big down the stretch in those games too. That's what makes it even more special, because yeah, everyone expects the U.S. to just go out there and win, just show up and win, and Steph had to wait. He didn't want to go back in 2021 because of COVID, and so 2016 he was injured. 2012, don't know if he was quite good enough to make the team, so this was his one and only shot. And everybody, and I feel bad for all the people who are saying, oh, don't go, Steph, we don't want you to get all worn out before the NBA season.
That's what Willard was saying, right?
Yeah. So many people like, oh, I don't want you to play, Steph. I don't want you to play because I want you to be fresh for the Warriors season. And now we have this memory to all enjoy forever.
Yeah. Willard tweeted, let me find it really quick. He tweeted something about that. Oh, give me a sec. My Twitter's not loading. He tweeted something along the lines of how he was happy that Steph got the job done, but even happier that he stayed healthy. Glad you had fun at Stephen Curry 30. Even happier you made it through healthy. Which, I mean, he's not wrong. Like, I would hate to see Steph get injured, but that's not what I'm taking away from this Olympic
Games. Exactly.
That is not on the top of my list, that's for sure. And you can berate Willard for that coming up on Wednesday.
No doubt.
We can tag team.
I won't be here Wednesday, but
oh, you're right.
Next Monday I'll come at him.
I'll berate him on Wednesday then.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, one final segment to get to. We do got to mention the Giants, who are beginning a really important series, and what a pitching matchup tonight at Oracle Park. We can get into that on the other side, and we'll take your calls 888-957-957. We're sponsored by Lucky California. More Willard and Dibs with Grandy in for Willard. Dibs is here as always on 95.7 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Dillard and Wibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. About 10 more minutes of Willard and Dibbs here on 95.7 The Game. It is Mark Grandy in for Mark Willard. So Dibbs and Grandy with you today. We'll be back tomorrow. Dibbs is then off on Wednesday. Willard back on Wednesday. So it'll be Willard or Dibbs for this week. I know line you like, Dibbs. That's coming up the rest of the week here on 95.7 The Game on Willard and Dibbs. What also is coming up the rest of this week, Dibbs, is a hugely important series for the San Francisco Giants. They're just casually winning series left and right. They could have had a really nice series sweep yesterday if they did not let some bad base running get the best of them. But despite that loss, you blink and suddenly they're only a game and a half out of a playoff spot, dude. Right, it's kind of crazy. They've gotten major help because the Braves and Mets and the Cardinals, to a lesser degree, keep losing. The Padres and Diamondbacks are unstoppable right now, and they're making it a race for the NL West. The Dodgers are not running away with the division because the Diamondbacks and Padres are doing nothing but winning every single game they play lately. But the Braves have lost 7 of their last 10. The Mets are 4-6. The Cardinals are 4-6. The Giants are 7-3, and they have quietly made up some good ground. But we could only be the Giants a half game out if they had just taken care of business and not made outs on the base paths yesterday and swept the Detroit Tigers. But still, you win a series.
Yep.
That's now, what, four straight series won? Four out of five, and the only one they didn't win was a two-game split with the A's. They're playing much better baseball lately, and it's suddenly translated to the standings.
No doubt, and this is why when we talk about the math is there, and I know that drives Steiny crazy, and Mark Willard always claps back at it as well, but this is what we're talking about. Guru and I, yes, you have to play good baseball to make the math actually work, but this is what you do when you try to make a move. You win a series, 2 of 3 from Detroit. You took 3 of 4 from Washington, 2 of 3 from Cincinnati, split with Oakland. You sweep Colorado. You go all the way back to the Dodgers the last time you didn't win a series, which was almost a month ago, and you just chip away. You don't have to win 9 in a row or 11 of 12. You just win 2 of 3. Now you've got Atlanta, a team against whom you are directly competing, and they're in a little bit of a free fall. You mentioned they've lost 7 of 10, and I go back a couple of months ago where they were the clear-cut number one wild card team, and they looked untouchable, and, well, they lost Acuna Jr., and they've lost a bunch of other players, and they feel like a team that is not going to be the third wild card. And yes, San Diego and Arizona have been great, and they're knocking on the Dodgers' door, but I think about that third wild card spot, and the Giants right now look to be the most poised team to get there.
Yeah, I mean, the Braves, that is, have been playing really bad baseball of late. The Giants, much better, maybe their best stretch of the season, the last, 15 games, they've been playing much, much better. But I'm in this point, Dibs, with the Giants, where I haven't, and I know that this is something that FP told me last week or 2 weeks ago, I tend to view things through this Giants season in a negative prism, and It's been hard for me to really believe that this team is going to put together this kind of run. And I'm at a spot now where my heart really wants me to buy in and to believe and think that this thing is possible. But every time I sit back down and I lock into a game, and this happened yesterday, and I kid you not, I hadn't changed my mind about the Giants and about me believing in the Giants that they're going to get into the postseason, and then, oh, you better look out. You got Snell and you got Webb and you got Ray. This is a staff you don't want to run into in October. And what made me change my mind there was Matt Chapman leading off the eighth inning with a triple. Down by one, he leads off the eighth with a triple, and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to sweep this. They might be a half game out. The Braves just blew a 6-run lead in the eighth inning against the Colorado Rockies of all teams.
Luke Jackson,
shout out. That's the best he did to help the team all season, right? And you were on the team
He's
for the majority of
giant.
The season.
I thought of you immediately when that happened. I almost texted you.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Who could have seen that coming? Luke Jackson coughing up a big lead in the eighth inning. But that was the moment where I finally let myself go and said, you know what? Maybe I've been wrong about this team all along. They're going to put something together. It's going to be magical. They're going to get it done. And then I kid you not, the next pitch, infield in, a ground ball off the bat of Canna.
You're still a little wound up.
Right
over
to
it.
Shortstop. And Chapman, who's maybe still woozy from needing oxygen after running all the way to third base, breaks for the plate on contact, seemingly, on an infield-in situation where the ball is grounded right to the shortstop. He gets thrown out. He does stay in the rundown long enough to allow Canna to get to second. But then the next batter, Canna, gets thrown out on the bases, and the Giants go from a runner on third, nobody out, to a runner on first with two outs, and they don't score a run. And then they don't punch a run in that inning. They go down in order in the ninth, and they lose that game. And I know it's just one game, but it felt kind of inauspicious because, I kid you not, in my brain, I allowed myself to start thinking positive thoughts.
Right.
After Matt
Which is
Chapman,
hard for you.
It, very hard for me. After Matt Chapman hit that triple, and then from the second I changed my mind, it all went downhill. So I'm just going to stay in my negative lane, and maybe I'll be positively surprised by the end of the season.
Okay, and I think this series is a big-time determinant as far as, you know, how you might feel, because, you know, Atlanta's a team that is ahead of them, and Atlanta's a team that you need to catch, and you're only 1.5 out. So if you win another series, you take 3 of these 4. I know you got the White Sox coming up as well, and you start to look at, you know, what's to come for this Giants team. I know September gets a little bit hairy with the schedule, but right now you've got a spot where you've got winnable games and you're catching Atlanta at just the right time. Your rotation now is lined up beautifully, and the pitching matchups in this series are going to be really, really fun.
Yeah.
A lot of good, should be some good, quick, tight baseball played down there at third and King.
You talk about a couple of good lefties going tonight. You got Chris Sale for the Braves and Blake Snell for the Giants. Sale has been awesome all season long, kind of a resurgent season for him, and no one has been better than Blake Snell over like the last month and a half. He has been incredible for the Giants, and we got sneak in one more call before we get on out of here today. Robert, who's on his way to Oracle as we speak right now, wants to talk about that very pitching matchup that Dibs brought up. It's Snell versus Sale. Robert, you picked a good day to head to the game. What's up?
How you guys doing today? Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, we got you, Robert.
Excellent. It's good to talk to both you guys, Dibs and Grandy. I'm literally right next to the Ferry Building right now. I am so excited for this matchup. I just bought my, like, 8th or 9th game this season.
Nice.
And I have not seen Snell yet, but so I'm very excited for that, yeah. Seeing someone like Chris Sale, you know, over all these years at Boston and Chicago and now Atlanta, obviously, that'll be really fun. But, let's just get this win tonight. Go Giants, and we gotta get 2 out of 3 and Jorge Soler back in the park in the other uniform. So that'll be a trip to see. So. Yeah, let's go Giants. Let's get this W, man.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Robert.
Love
and have
it,
fun
Robert,
at the
yeah.
game. I mean, this is a premier matchup. Snell versus Sale, and it isn't the only good pitching matchup. I guess that's kind of natural for the Giants nowadays because, I mean, while maybe we could poke fun at Farhan for saying exactly what he said at the deadline about this being the best staff in baseball, you do at the very least have a group of very, very good pitchers, and ever since Farhan did say that, Logan Webb has started pitching like the ace that he is once again as well, and Snell has obviously since then pitched a no-hitter and got another win in Washington as well.
I actually didn't ridicule Farhan for that statement, and I've ridiculed him for a lot of things.
Almost everything else.
Pretty much, but I thought that statement was spot on because, thank you, when they are all right and it looks like they're all getting to be, you know, in a good spot, Harrison is looking pretty tired and Birdsong is kind of coming back to earth, but the other three, you've got three aces on your team, and three of those guys, all three of them, rather, will go in this series. So you go out there, you win the first game of a four-game set, and next thing you know, you wake up in the morning, and you'll probably be, what, a half game out of the wild card, and you win another one, and you might find yourself, by the end of the week, you might find yourself in that third wild card spot. It's possible. The math is there.
The math is there. Hopefully Steiny's not listening. I'm sure he's listening. Not.
He's listening. He was texting me earlier.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
What is Steiny doing listening right now? Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah. He was out and about.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, Steiny.
He was reacting to the Bobby Fitz interview.
Oh, I'm sure he was. Yeah. I'm sure he loved it.
He loved it.
Steiny loved
it. No doubt.
All right. That's all we got time for today. Lucas, what's coming up next on Best of the Game?
Bob Fitzgerald, you spoke just of him. That's how we're going to kick best of the game off.
Fitz, coming up next. Can't wait for it. For Dibs, for Lucas, my name is Mark Grandy, in for Mark Willard today. Signing off, Dibs, we'll be back tomorrow. Looking forward to it already as you get ready for
Friday,
a nice break.
Dog, let's go.
Yeah,
it's birthday week.
There we go. Happy early birthday to Dibs. Everyone call in tomorrow and wish Dibs a happy birthday.
Yeah.
And that's a fun way to end the week for Dibs.
Nope.
That's coming up tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. But coming up next, brought to you by Fremont Bank, is Best of the Game, an hour of 95.7 The Game's best content from the day, hosted by Lucas Alexander. For Dibs, for Lucas, I'm Mark signing off. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk tomorrow.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.